You're listening to LawPod UK. It's a podcast that covers developments across all aspects of civil and public law in the United Kingdom. All the comments are current at the time of podcast publication. It's brought to you by the barristers at 1 Crown Office Row, and this edition is presented by Emma-Louise Fenelon.
In a decision dated the 10th of January this year, Samira Ahmed, a BBC presenter and journalist, won a decisive employment tribunal victory. She had claimed that she was underpaid by up to £700,000 for her work compared with Jeremy Vine, and the unanimous judgment held that the BBC had failed to prove this pay gap wasn't because of sex discrimination. The decision, which comes at a time of real concern about the BBC's future, caused a firestorm. The BBC was criticised by its own staff for hiring an employment consultancy to help tackle its pay gap with its own poor gender pay gap record. Others complained about the prioritisation of equal pay inside the corporation in the face of threatened cuts to the wider output. Here with me to talk about the decision is Shaheen Rahman QC of 1 Crown Office Row. Shaheen, can you tell us a little bit more about the background to the case?
Yes, there's been a very long history to this matter. It started really as far back as July 2017 when the BBC published the pay of their top earners, people earning more than £150,000 a year, and the gender disparity became very clear at that point. And you had, I think, the top seven employees in terms of pay all being male. So that is what then prompted female employees in particular to ask questions about their pay and a number of well-publicised cases such as Carrie Gracie, where it appeared that there had been significant underpay of women by comparison to male staff doing the same job. And that is the background, really. And we ended with a number of cases apparently being settled out of court. We've recently heard that Sarah Montague apparently settled a case out of court. She was presenting a programme with John Humphreys, who was one of those very high earners. But this is a case, Samira Ahmed's, where the BBC declined to make a settlement and they went to the tribunal to defend the disparity in pay with Jeremy Vine.
And in order to just succeed, what did Ms. Ahmed have to demonstrate?
There's two stages. First thing that she had to show was that she was doing like work of equal value to Jeremy Vine. What she was questioning is why Jeremy Vine had been paid more than six times her salary to present a very similar TV programme. And that was her first hurdle, but she established that very easily. And this is why. You can see from the tribunal's findings after hearing quite a lot of evidence, which I'll go into in a moment, that the upshot was that both Samira Ahmed and Jeremy Vine presented 15-minute pre-recorded programmes, magazine format, and they discussed viewers' opinions on BBC programmes. There were some differences, but they were only minor. For instance, on her programme, Newswatch, the focus was on news programmes, and on his, the focus was on any programme that the BBC put out. So much was made by the BBC of the fact that points of view was lighter in tone and required different skills, and they characterised this as an entertainment programme for which higher remuneration was appropriate. But again, the tribunal wholly rejected that. What was quite well publicised of the judgment was what the BBC relied upon to justify that. For instance, they asserted that you needed a kind of glint in the eye to present points of view. And the tribunal struggled to understand how exactly does that transfer to a skill or experience to do a job, because at the end of the day, both of the presenters were required to read from a script, and occasionally on points of view you'd have some light humour arising from that, but if the script told Jeremy Vine to roll his eyes, he did. That's what the tribunal found. And it doesn't really require any skill or experience to do that. And I'd add, there's no real evidence that Samira Ahmed can't roll her eyes. And if I were her, I'd be, you know, adopting that from henceforward as something she does regularly on screen, because it seems to be very well rewarded if you can do that. But, you know, joking aside, they didn't accept that Points of View was an entertainment programme. It's a factual programme, and there's no significant differences in pay justified on that account as compared to this sort of news programme.
What other arguments did the BBC use to try and justify paying Jeremy Vine more?
Well, in terms of the first issue, which is whether or not it was similar work, broadly speaking, they also tried to rely on audience figures. But actually, it appeared at the end of that exercise that Samira Ahmed's Newswatch programme was watched by about 1.5 million people per week, when you took into account it was broadcast again on a BBC breakfast show. On the other hand, Jeremy Vine's programme was only watched by about a million on BBC One. So that argument didn't go down very well for obvious reasons. And ultimately, they found that they were doing broadly similar work. And that was the first stage, which, as I say, was fairly easily satisfied by Samira Ahmed in this case.
And so having established that the work was like for like, what then did Ms. Ahmed have to demonstrate in order to succeed?
Well, at that stage, it's not the burden on Ms. Ahmed, in fact. Once you establish that it is broadly similar work, the burden shifted to the BBC. They had to then demonstrate that the pay disparity was not due to the difference in gender, that there was some other material factor that didn't involve discriminating against her. And this the BBC wholly failed to do. And I want to pause at that point really to consider some of the arguments and the evidence that the BBC has apparently deployed in its defence, because the tribunal were unusually critical of that. Some of this comes not from the tribunal decision, but some of the reporting. So it's got a sort of a health warning in that respect. But there was some very colourful evidence, apparently, according to press reports, for instance, concerning Jeremy Vine's agent. And apparently, in terms of negotiating this really lucrative package, he sent an email in which he said this:
"The BBC must now stop bullying this artist and pushing him around on this deal and listen to him. Stop treating him like a chattel and pay him properly. Let's have some mutual respect that is not meaningless words, not backed up by money. Stop saying there is no more money, as there is money for whatever you want it for. Just find it and stop treating Jeremy Vine like a child, as he is sick of it now."
And then you have in the tribunal sort of slightly unusual situation when the BBC rely on correspondence like that, when they, you know, essentially completely roll over in the face of this really, really aggressive agent. And they say, well, look, that's why we had to pay him more. But ultimately, the tribunal put very little weight on things like that. It's an email from somebody that the BBC didn't call. He wasn't subjected to cross-examination, for instance, as to what he was saying about Jeremy Vine being offered an awful lot more from other people, which the BBC seems to have just accepted at face value. And meanwhile, and this bit is in the judgment itself, what struck me was the BBC's approach to Samira Ahmed's pay negotiation. That was a completely different story. So when it came to her, her predecessor was somebody called Ray Snoddy. And there's an email about their plans for her pay negotiation. And it said this:
"We currently offer Ray Snoddy £440 per recording, and I would have thought that this was a fair starting point for Samira too. I would not object to a very modest increase on what Ray gets paid, though I don't think this should be necessary. If the agent says there must be a significant increase or she won't do it, then we will choose a different presenter."
So it's a completely different tone, and that's exactly what happened. The agent did try and get an increase, it was refused, and Samira Ahmed started on the 440 by comparison to the 3,000 per programme that Jeremy Vine got. And in fact, that 440 was put down in real terms under a new contract. And actually, the tribunal pointed out that Mr. Snoddy, who the BBC said was the true comparator, he had actually no broadcasting experience when he was appointed. If that was the basis of the pay structure, she shouldn't have been paid the same as him. But actually, they didn't really accept there was any pay structure. That's the problem. There was really no structure at all. It's just quite clear that Jeremy Vine was just far, far more esteemed by the BBC than Samira Ahmed all the way along.
What are some of the ways that the BBC tried to justify the pay disparity?
Well, one thing they said is that Jeremy Vine was taking over from Terry Wogan, who had been paid £3,500 per episode. So they weren't saying he was as great as Terry, but, you know, it had to be kind of up there to fill his shoes. But this is quite sort of striking in the judgment. They noted that that document, which purported to evidence that, was of questionable origin. And it wholly contradicted another document they relied on that said that he was only paid £2,000. And there are other, I think, quite serious criticisms within the judgment about some of the things that were relied upon to defend the stance of the BBC. They say that Samira Ahmed was told a number of things about Mr. Vine's pay and what he was on, which was simply not true. And she was also told that there'd be some form of meaningful consultation period before a final decision was made about her pay. And again, that wasn't true. The decision had been made and approved already. So I think that does make really quite surprising reading. They also try to rely on things which don't really bear much scrutiny. They relied on audience recognition figures, i.e., you know, who recognises Mr. Vine and who recognises Samira Ahmed, and many more recognised him. But that evidence postdated the events concerned, i.e., it postdated the hugely lucrative and high-profile job that he was offered, or gifted, as is Miss Ahmed put it. And actually, there was no evidence that audience recognition at the time was actually factored in at any stage to any of the decisions. And the final thing that they did, which I think has become now well known, is that they failed to call anybody to give direct evidence about precisely how the decisions on pay were reached. And that, again, went down very badly with the tribunal.
I suppose it goes back to the point you made at the beginning, which is that much of this might not have come about if the BBC hadn't been required by Royal Charter to publish these figures, because a lack of transparency and opacity seems to be a theme running through some of the evidential findings of the tribunal. I think what struck me in the aftermath of the judgment is how unusual the BBC's reaction was to this. The BBC issued a statement, including lines such as, "We're sorry the tribunal didn't think the BBC provided enough evidence about specific decisions. We were not able to call people who made decisions as far back as 2008 and have long since left the BBC. And then we regret that this case ever had to go to tribunal." And I have to say, it struck me that these are the sorts of things that are said by an organisation who has not necessarily reflected on the decision that's been made and the overwhelming objective evidence that gender pay discrimination was evident in this case.
Well, yes, I had the same thought about that press statement. The point about them not calling anyone to give direct evidence, they seem in that statement to be implying that had they been able to get witnesses from the time period concerned, they would have been able to satisfy the tribunal that this was a fair and transparent system, or fair. They couldn't have satisfied the tribunal it was transparent, because it obviously wasn't. I think the BBC is really missing the point that the tribunal's making here. The tribunal recognises that this all happened quite a long time ago. But had they had an actual structure in place, it would have been possible to demonstrate that through documentary evidence and the like. And there simply was no such system. And that's why they couldn't evidence why the pay for these two employees was so starkly disparate. But more than that, and I think this is what the BBC do really need to appreciate, is this: if you don't have a fair and transparent system, that in itself makes it very easy for bias to creep in or to be disguised, because no one is actually checking against a set framework for pay against fair criteria. Instead, pay is set by reference to things that are somewhat more nebulous and which upon scrutiny appear to be discriminatory, because there is no other explanation or justification by reference to a fair material factor. So I do think that the press statement does demonstrate a lack of insight. The upshot of it is that the BBC, as we've said, held Mr. Vine in a far higher regard than Ms. Ahmed when it came to setting their pay. They didn't have a decent explanation for it. And for that reason, they weren't able to rebut the presumption that that striking disparity in pay for broadly similar work was attributable to gender. That isn't something that the statement suggests the BBC accept.
And as we know from some of the evidence that came out during Ms. Ahmed's case, there are a number of cases being brought by female BBC presenters and journalists regarding pay disparity. In terms of what employers can learn from this judgment, what should they be taking away?
Well, I think this judgment creates huge problems for the BBC, and any organisation that has a similar approach should take note of it, even if the BBC don't seem to be at the moment. To my mind, it exposes an entrenched attitude that has led to unlawful discrimination, and that can't realistically be confined to this one case, and hence you've got all these other cases in the background. I think it's worth considering the way, during the hearing, the BBC describe the two journalists, because it was part of their defence really essentially to belittle the work that Samir Ahmed was doing. Again, this is press reports at the hearing. An analogy was drawn at one point whereby Vine was characterised as a concert pianist in a concert hall, and Ahmed was more like someone playing piano to a ballet class of 10 children. And obviously, that description is so belittling. It doesn't actually seem at all apt, given the true viewing figures were higher for Ahmed's show. But it's that demeaning attitude to her work, it seems to me, must have been clearly in place for some time from the outset, really. As we've seen, it was decided before they began negotiating a pay that no ground was going to be given at all, despite her having greater broadcast experience than her predecessor. That sort of attitude isn't going to disappear overnight in any organisation. And as I say, there doesn't seem any reason on the basis of the current press statement to believe that the BBC really wants to address it at all. So I think on the basis of that, further tribunal cases seem inevitable in the BBC's case, not just the historic cases, because they're probably making similar decisions right now. There's a further problem specific to the BBC, which is that the Equality and Human Rights Commission has been undertaking a formal investigation into this issue, and they're due to report soon. Now, the BBC also said in their statement that the tribunal was satisfied that the current pay of Ms. Ahmed has been adequately explained, which would chime with their efforts to persuade the commission that things have changed. But the tribunal actually commented that to some extent the BBC still do not have a transparent and consistent process for determining pay in its view. And it'll be interesting to see if the commission agrees with that. They, in their terms of reference, do say that they recognise the BBC's commitment to reform and desire to work collaboratively in ensuring reforms are fully refined and embedded. But I think that the way the case has been defended and the statement issued following the judgment doesn't really sit well with that apparent commitment to reform. The BBC is subject to the public sector equality duty, and the commission has got powers to get tough with the BBC. They can assist others with their cases. They could issue compliance notices, fines, and that sort of thing. And I'm not sure how impressed the commission will be with the way the case has been handled, or with the fact that other cases, such as Sarah Montague's case, have been settled, but apparently at an undervalue with some form of private apology. That doesn't really demonstrate a sea change in attitudes. So I think that there are real problems for the BBC arising from the judgment, and similar organisations who have a similar culture would do well to take note of the sorts of problems that can lead to when you defend certain cases.
Shaheen, thank you so much for coming in and telling us all about this judgment, which will be linked in the blog post accompanying this episode.
Thank you very much.
LawPod UK was presented by Emma Louise Fenlon and is produced by One Crown Office Row. For more editions of LawPod UK, you can subscribe to the podcast and recommend us to a friend.